Welcome back to Zephyr News, a weekly production of FM 90.1 KZFR Chico. Zephyr News is broadcast each Thursday evening from 7 to 7:30 p.m. This week's show features contributions from Chico Soul and the Sacramento Observer. Segments from KZFR community members include coverage of the Chico City Council meeting by Obriana Campbell, news releases by David Foose, and a segment on the Bidwell Mansion by Obriana Campbell.
This is Hope Rihanna for Zephyr News. For generations, Bidwell Mansion has stood as one of Chico's most important historical landmarks. Built in the 1860s, the Victorian home was once owned by John and Annie Bidwell, two major figures in the early history of California and the Chico area. Over the years, the mansion became both a tourist destination and an educational site, drawing visitors from across the state interested in local history, architecture, and California's pioneer era. A newly released report is painting a difficult picture for efforts to rebuild the mansion after the devastating fire that heavily damaged the historic structure late last year. Historic reconstruction projects are already complicated under normal circumstances, but Bidwell Mansion presents unique challenges because of its age, historic designation, and the level of fire damage involved. In Chico Enterprise Record, Michael Weber states that the report lists a few salvageable components that could potentially be documented or reused, including the rear porch, tower wood corbels, main roof soffits, second floor window hoods, window sash weights, tower components, and the interior fireplace. He also states, while the mansion's brick walls are structurally reusable, the report said rebuilding it would require seismic and strengthening upgrades that are costly and difficult to complete. It recommended either full reconstruction, removing brick walls, or repairing the walls to maintain it as a visible component of the park. So now, these consultants and preservation experts evaluating the site say rebuilding the structure exactly as it once stood could require an enormous amount of money, specialized construction work, and years of planning. Historic reconstruction projects are already complicated under normal circumstances, but Bidwell Mansion presents unique challenges because of its age, historic designation, and the level of fire damage involved. At this point, there are still major unanswered questions about where the money for a full rebuild would come from. Possible funding sources could include state funding, grants, private donations, fundraising campaigns, or partnerships with preservation organizations. But officials have not yet identified a complete financial plan for reconstruction. Michael Weber also states, the Bidwell Mansion Association stated on its website that it will continue to follow the Reimagine Bidwell Mansion State Historic Mansion project closely. And advocate for transparency, meaningful communication, community involvement, and a future that honors the history, educational purpose, and public significance of Bidwell Mansion. State officials are expected to continue evaluating possible next steps in the months ahead. That process will likely include engineering studies, preservation analysis, cost estimates, and public discussion about what options are realistic moving forward. This is Hope Rihanna for Zephyr News.
This is Patrice for Chico Soul. This week, cultural graduations at Butte College are affected by funding decisions, concern and confusion about the future of Chico Seed Orchard's operations, and the final ruling in a Public Records Act dispute. In education news, Butte College is changing how cultural centers and student groups can use certain funding sources for graduation celebrations. Some students and staff say the changes reflect a broader move away from prioritizing inclusion. They've also raised concerns about a lack of transparency in how those decisions were made. Until this year, these cultural centers at the community college held celebrations that reflected a rich mix of traditions from different ethnic and cultural backgrounds. But after the college made changes last month to how celebrations would take place, the Latinx Council and the Black Leadership and Cultural Center, also known as the Black Center, opted to not participate in what were seen as modified celebrations, college sources told Chico Soul. While some groups, like the Queer Resource Center, will still be holding small, modified graduation celebrations, others, like the Black Center, have opted to host cord and stole pickup days. An anonymous source close to the Latinx Council said the center chose to cancel its participation in the celebration for two reasons: a lack of transparency and poor timing, saying that they weren't going to have the funds for the things they needed for the celebration. There are increased concerns among the campus community and educators statewide as the Trump administration continues to crack down on DEI initiatives supporting historically marginalized students. Jared Smith, a student trustee on the Butte College Board of Trustees, expressed worries that the college is no longer upholding its equity and inclusion values, stating that, according to many of the students he's spoken with, this is a, quote, slap in the face and a walk back on our commitment to honor what we say is a Hispanic-serving institution, unquote. In environmental news, a U.S. Forest Service announcement about reorganization plans has raised concern among employees, senators, and Congress members about the future of research operations of the Chico Seed Orchard. The Chico Seed Orchard harvests seeds that are sent to the Forest Service's Regional Seed Bank, where they're preserved for potential reforestation efforts, according to an article by Lord Liedner, the Mendocino National Forest Public Affairs Officer. While the orchard will remain fully operational for now, a USDA organization website published last month originally listed Chico, among five other research facilities in California, quote, possible research and development facility closures, unquote, according to the Internet Archive. Exactly how this reorganization will take place remains unclear. In other news, Butte County Superior Court Judge Stephen Benson has issued a final ruling in Dave Waddell's Public Records Act lawsuit against local law enforcement agencies. Benson's final ruling states that the law enforcement agencies cannot blur faces and conceal identities of officers in released video. Here is First Amendment attorney Matthew Cate explaining why he successfully argued that the defendants, Sheriff Corey Honey, District Attorney Mike Ramsey, and Chico PD, should not conceal the identities of officers appearing in the released video.
So the tentative ruling actually, I think the tentative ruling gets away from the privacy issue. I think he actually, the court seems to suggest that in the tentative ruling that it's not a privacy interest. I think the court agrees with us on that. And so that's why with the Sampson records, the court said no recordings or no names can be redacted of the officers. I think the court also means that redactions of the images is inappropriate in the Sampson shooting. And what we were trying to explain today is that should hold for the Oxley recordings as well. And the court basically just said with Oxley, there's an ongoing investigation. And so you're allowed to redact the officer's images. And I tried to explain today that that's actually not the case under the law.
Benson also ruled that he would not provide Waddell with declaratory relief. He would not issue a ruling stating that the defendants had been in violation of the Records Act. Such a ruling, Cate told Chico Soul, would increase the likelihood that the defendants would fully comply with the Public Records Act in the future. According to Waddell, he received one of the requested records, a single audio recording of an officer interview, less than 24 hours before the May 13th hearing, though the request had been submitted to the DA more than 200 days earlier. Attorneys for the City of Chico and Chico PD argued that it's necessary to withhold some documents that would, quote, substantially interfere with ongoing investigations. Benson largely ruled in their favor on that matter. This has been Patrice for Chico Soul. Follow the latest at chicosoul.org. At chicosoul.org, you can also subscribe to our free weekly newsletter, The Little Set, to get notified about new content and hear directly from our writers. That's chicosoul.org.
This is Hope Rihanna for Zephyr News. At the Chico City Council meeting, agenda item 5.8, a proposal that would allow alcohol service and consumption at events held at Chico Creek Nature Center. City leaders are considering a resolution that could open the door for beer, wine, or other alcohol to be served during approved gatherings and special events at the Nature Center property. Supporters say the move could help expand fundraising opportunities, attract more community events, and create additional revenue for programs connected to environmental education and public outreach. Council members also expected to weigh several factors during the discussion. One question is whether allowing alcohol at certain events could help the Nature Center host more evening receptions, nonprofit fundraisers, educational galas, weddings, or community celebrations. At the same time, some residents may have concerns about preserving the family-friendly atmosphere of the Nature Center and surrounding park areas. Because the facility sits near sensitive natural spaces and recreation areas, issues like litter, noise, parking, public safety, and environmental impacts are likely parts of the conversation as well. If this item moves forward, alcohol service would likely still require permits, insurance, and compliance with California alcohol laws and city event regulations. Public Works Director Skylar Lipsky speaks at the Chico City Council meeting.
Has requested an authorization to permit the service and consumption of alcoholic beverages during rentals and community events at the Chico Nature Center. At its April 27th meeting, the Bidwell Park and Playground Commission reviewed the proposal, received public input, and recommended that the City Council amend Chapter 12R.04 of the Chico Municipal Code accordingly. The proposal would allow alcohol to be served and consumed at the Chico Nature Center under the following framework: alcohol permitted only during rentals and community events, approved by card, requirement for a valid ABC license, use of temporary controls such as fencing and/or signage, and compliance with all applicable city and state regulations. should be noted that deed restrictions originally imposed by Annie Bidwell, including those pertaining to alcohol, are no longer applicable for the reasons in the staff report that you can see there. Historically, alcohol use was permitted in certain areas prior to the adoption of the citywide ban in 1994, and there are some exceptions, of course, the Bidwell Park Municipal Course and City Plaza. With that, and the speed run through it, I'm available for any questions.
City leaders are expected to carefully consider how the decision could affect nearby park users and the overall identity of nature itself. The site has traditionally been viewed as an educational and family-centered destination, and council members may debate on how to preserve that atmosphere, even if alcohol service becomes allowed during selected events. As the meeting moves forward, council members will have to decide not just whether alcohol should be allowed at the Chico Creek Nature Center, but what kind of community space the city wants the center to be in the years ahead. The conversation reflects a broader challenge many cities are facing: finding ways to support public programs financially while still protecting the spaces residents value most. This is Hope Rihanna for Zephyr News.
how one family is pushing back on South Sac transit failures. Hey, this is Faye from Game Ant Play, and this article is brought to you by The Observer, written by Williamena Quapo. South Sacramento resident Kim Steffens and her family take on the city's transportation gaps and inefficiencies by starting a nonprofit. For someone with a car, a trip to Prairie Elementary School to Kaiser Permanente, South Sacramento, takes 5 to 10 minutes. For Kim Steffens, a South Sacramento resident who has a physical disability in her leg, that same round trip can consume almost an entire day. Without a personal vehicle, she relies on what she sees as inconvenient transit options, such as City Flex service, ride shares, and buses, none of which guarantee she will arrive on time. In the worst case, a round trip to the doctor can take up to 6 hours of planning, waiting, and travel. Quote, Flex isn't flexible. I know now that I need to schedule 3, 4, 5 hours ahead of time because the wait can be a 2-hour timeline, end quote, Stefan says. What Stefan describes is more than inconvenience. It's a reflection of what many residents and advocates say is an inefficient and unreliable transportation system in South Sacramento, shaped by infrastructure gaps and policy decisions that do not work for residents. Sidewalks are often cracked or non-existent. Bus stops can sit many blocks apart. For people with mobility issues, simply getting to a stop can be physically painful and almost impossible. Quote, the bus stops are in places where I'm not. So I'm expected to walk 4 or 5 blocks for a bus that's not even going to come on time, end quote, Stefan says. Stefan's and her family want to change the everyday transportation barriers of those who live in South Sacramento through their nonprofit. The Stefan's Foundation, it aims to improve civic engagement and reduce the impact of environmental injustices. The foundation has developed a possible fix it is calling Sacramento Shine, a proposed community-specific shuttle network designed to fill the gaps they say SACRT's countywide system has never addressed. Quote, it's creating these hotspots where people would be able to get more of a shuttle more so than a bus. The hotspots would take you from a common commercial space then to where school is, then maybe open space, end quote, says Desiree Fox, Stefan's daughter and president of the foundation. The concept is deliberately limited to the South Sacramento area. Rather than overhaul the entire transit system, Sacramento Shine would operate only within a defined South Sacramento map, connecting places people actually need to reach, such as grocery stores, schools, clinics, and light rail stations with frequent and predictable service. They know it can work because just a few miles north, a similar concept already does. In North Natomas, a nonprofit called Jibe has quietly shaped a community transport network since 1999, created by the Sacramento City Council, alongside a community financing district built into the neighborhood's original master plan. Jibe is a transport management association that helps residents and workers choose sustainable ways to get around, such as walking, biking, taking transit, or sharing rides. The organization operates with a goal of cutting solo car trips, improving air quality, and building more of a connected community. Jibe is funded primarily through a special tax on residential and commercial property within the district, including about $33 per residential property owner. With that revenue dedicated to transportation solutions for the neighborhood, in return, the community gets a suite of programs. Such programs include daily walk and bike to school activities at 11 school sites, a 10-hour fifth grade bike education course, and the Earn a Bike initiative that pairs safety and skills training with a bicycle reward. Jibe also hosts a community bike swap, coordinates and subsidizes van pools, provides free transit passes and bus education for trips from North Natomas to downtown Sacramento, and runs a program that covers up to 5 guaranteed rides home a year for people who commute sustainably. All of this is available to those who live or work in the North Natomas area. Jibe Executive Director Melissa Meng says the organization's effectiveness comes down to showing up consistently where decisions are made. Quote, the power of community voice is extremely important. One of the things I'm proud of working with Jibe and why we've been effective is because we have a consistent voice and we're at the table. End quote. She acknowledged that Jibe's funding model established before North Natomas was developed would be difficult to replicate in an already built community, but for her, that doesn't mean it's impossible to fund in other ways. Quote, these types of programs don't need to be funded in the exact same way that Jibe funds them. The different programs could be modeled and tweaked and implemented, end quote.
Fox and her family know the road ahead is long. She's clear-eyed about the politics, the jurisdictional tangle between the city and county, the decades of disinvestment, and residents too overstretched to attend the public hearings they were never taught to navigate. But she points out that the case for South Sacramento already has been made many times in city and county documents. The air quality data is there. The pedestrian fatality maps are there. The federal and state climate mandates naming South Sacramento a priority community are there. Quote, our elected officials aren't invested in us. They're relying on us not knocking on the doors, end quote. This article was published May 5th, 2026. This is Faye for Zephyr News.
This is David Foose reporting for Zephyr News. CAL FIRE and the Butte County Fire Department, in conjunction with the Butte County Fire Safe Council's Upper Ridge Fuels Reduction Project, announced a 50-acre controlled burn between Rambling Way and Lake Paradise in Megalia to be conducted between May 27th and May 29th. The objective of the burn is to reduce hazardous fuels, enhance natural resources, and increase public safety. The burn will only take place if air quality and weather conditions are within the prescribed parameters. Megalia residents should expect to see smoke during the burn. The Chico Area Recreation and Park District, or CARD, is inviting the entire community to celebrate America's 250th birthday at its third annual 4th of July parade on Saturday, July 4th, beginning at 9 a.m. Participants are encouraged to deck out a float, bike, equestrian, or vehicle with music, costumes, and decorations. The entry fee is $30, but free for veterans and active military members. Entries are limited to the first 100 paid registrants. Sponsorship opportunities are available for local businesses and organizations and include a complimentary float or vehicle entry in the parade. CARD is also looking for a community member age 17 or younger to serve as the 2026 Grand Marshal. Details are available at the CARD website, chicorec.gov. The Bureau of Reclamation announced that it will open the Delta Cross Channel gates for the upcoming Memorial Day holiday weekend to improve recreational boating access to the Sacramento-San Joaquin Delta. The gates are scheduled to open on Friday, May 22nd at 10 a.m. and will remain open through Tuesday, May 26th at 10 a.m. The temporary opening will provide enhanced access for boaters traveling between the Sacramento River and the Central Delta during the busy holiday weekend. A new California Water Coalition held a webinar Wednesday to outline what it calls its Water Renaissance Plan for the state's water future. The plan includes analysis and sources to support its vision. As Cal Matters puts it, California is managing 21st century water challenges with 20th century technology under 19th century law. California's water bureaucracy is antiquated, inequitable, and unaccountable. The coalition that drafted the plan includes defenders of wildlife, tribal groups, the UCLA Center for Climate Science, Los Angeles Waterkeeper, Restore the Delta, the Golden Gate Salmon Association, the California Sport Fishing Protection Alliance, Friends of the River, the Resource Renewal Institute, San Francisco Baykeeper, the Sierra Club of California, the Winamem Wintu Tribe, and the Yosemite Rivers Alliance. The goal of the plan is to reduce California's dependence on importing water across long distances by boosting local water supplies through more sustainable water management. The plan identifies specific strategies for developing drought-proof water supplies. The plan prioritizes investment in wastewater recycling, stormwater capture, groundwater remediation, and water efficiency. Goals include investing locally, reducing risky imports, and reforming policy and funding. The project would improve flood protection, restore habitat, and improve both water supplies and quality. The Water Renaissance Plan includes 8 priority recommendations. Direct state agencies to end planning and advocacy for the Delta Tunnel. Consider purchasing an ambitious general obligation water bond that focuses on modern local water supplies. Develop best management practices and regulatory standards to address harmful algal blooms, require the adoption of tribal beneficial uses, direct state officials to ensure Colorado River diversions are appropriately reduced, create a framework for local businesses to fund green infrastructure for stormwater capture, remove the cap on large water recycling projects for receiving loans from the state revolving fund, and reform Proposition 218 to allow for local water rate assistance programs and ensure aggressive conservation rates can be implemented. Dr. Benjamin Bass, UCLA Center for Climate Science, stated that California is not receiving enough precipitation to overcome evaporation losses from temperature rise due to global warming. He added that estimates of future water availability do not account for reduced amounts from the Colorado River or increases in the cost of imported water. Dr. Bass said the most reliable source of water in the future will be local water. The coalition is opposed to both the Delta Conveyance Project, also known as the Delta Tunnel, and the site's reservoir. They contend that California does not have the resources to invest in both local sources and the Delta Tunnel project. Barbara Berrigan-Perea, Executive Director, Restore the Delta, says we are coming up on the biggest financial decision in the state's history, funding the Delta Tunnel or local solutions. Berrigan-Perea said that the proposed projects like the Delta Tunnel would decimate ecosystems and communities throughout California. It's past time to focus our limited dollars on water infrastructure investments that are sustainable for both urban and rural farming communities, respect tribal water and land uses, and will allow keystone species like salmon to recover. We can create improved water supplies and restore the largest estuary on the West Coast. According to the coalition, the plan would secure almost 2 million acre-feet of drought-proof water supplies in Southern California by 2045 at a cost of $44 billion, while the Delta Conveyance Project will only yield 500,000 acre-feet, or a quarter as much, at a cost that will likely exceed $60 billion. Bruce Resnick from LA Waterkeeper said that 60% of Los Angeles water is imported and claimed that the city is not treating local water sources well, a major problem being pollution from runoff and sewage discharges. He identified potential new sources of water from wastewater recycling, 10% conservation/efficiency, stormwater capture, and groundwater remediation. Resnick said that Southern California water agencies are already turning towards projects that can provide reliable local water. He said Los Angeles County has plans to go from 40% local water to 80% by 2045, and the city of Los Angeles from 10% to 70% by 2035. His mantra is reduce, recycle, reuse, restore. The idea behind the Renaissance is a shift toward sustainable local water that is available rain or shine. Frankie Myers of the Yurok tribe put it this way: we must each take responsibility for the ecosystem we live in and as a steward of this planet. Detailed information about the plan is available at cawaterrenaissance.org. This is David Foos for Zephyr News.
Zephyr News is produced by Trevor Parks, Lorenz Weissel, and KZFR volunteers. Listeners may send tips for stories to news@kzfr.org or by using the Submit a Story icon on kzfr.org. This program is made possible by the financial support of listeners like you. You can support KZFR's journalistic endeavors by visiting kzfr.org/donate. Subscribe to Zephyr News on your favorite podcast platform and share your thoughts on social media. Thank you for tuning in. We'll be back next week.
You are tuned in to FM 90.1.